Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And Jim, the good martini comes to us courtesy of a fairly extensive poll from Quinnipiac University. They look at where the candidates stand nationally. They also look at candidate favorability rates, and they also have these fun things called word clouds. In other words, they say, give me the first word that comes to mind when I say this candidate's name. So Hillary Clinton's unfavorable, still underwater. That's good news, although a little bit better in this poll than some of the others we've seen. 39% favorable, 51% unfavorable. Okay, give me a word to describe Hillary Clinton. Number one, liar, 178 people. Dishonest, 123 people. Untrustworthy, 93 people. Then she gets some positives, but pretty far down there. Experience, strong, Bill, woman, smart, and then comes crook, untruthful, criminal, deceitful, Democrat. So, Jim, if that's the narrative Republicans are hoping that the voters take into 2016, assuming Hillary is the nominee, that's a pretty good narrative right there.
You know, it sounds almost like a song, you know. Crook, untruthful, criminal, deceitful, Democrat. It just kind of rolls together. It fits very well, yeah. But obviously, like, when the first three terms are liar, dishonest, and untrustworthy, that's a big problem, right? And they're like, you know, then the first one that's good is experience, which is made by like 82 people. But like 400 people have said bad things by that point before you get to somebody saying good things. I have a piece over on National Review Online that says, look, the Biden mania should unnerve Republicans a little bit. And, you know, it's a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but my original title was Fear the Biden, kind of like Unleash the Kraken. But honestly, right now, Hillary Clinton is a uniquely flawed, not just flawed, but damaged candidate. She has her own problems of always seeming kind of stiff and brittle and cold, calculating, all that kind of stuff. Her record at state isn't good, the whole issue. But I think the two things, one is the we all forget the donor issue to the Clinton Foundation, the sense that maybe state was putting out, was turning into a favor factory under her. And now this thing with the classified information in the email. I mean, there's a reason people think she's a really big liar, and that's a really juicy target to run against in a general election campaign, no matter who the Republican nominee is. And if they change their mind and they nominate Biden, they nominate Sanders, they nominate somebody else, all of a sudden all these issues go away. And all of this time that has been, you know, this preparation of the battle space for the 2016 campaign becomes moot, because now we got to talk about, you know, Biden or Sanders or somebody else. So I want this to come out where Hillary comes out of this really, really damaged. And the damage is being done, but let's not damage Hillary too quickly. Knock it off. No, say nice things about her.
Well, they only asked about two of the Republican candidates on favorability and first word that comes to mind, and they didn't fare too well either. But Bush is at 32% favorable, 41% unfavorable, 26% haven't heard enough. Far and away, the word that first comes to mind, Bush, followed by family, honest, weak, brother, dynasty. So I think those are the issues he's clearly dealing with. And then with Donald Trump.
Family, honest, weak, brother, dynasty.
Donald Trump, 36% favorable, 54% unfavorable. Hold on, Trump fans. Here are the words that first come to mind. Arrogant, blowhard, idiot, businessman, clown, honest, ego, money, outspoken, crazy, rich, showman, strong, and then it gets vulgar. So it's going to be a tough road on the narrative for candidates, potentially, no matter who ends up on the general election ballot.
You know, just thinking here. Honest, ego, money, outspoken, crazy, rich, showman. They just go together. It just seems like it should be a campaign song for these guys. Yeah, great selection we got here. The observation that Bush is, you know, got, like, Bush is the name most commonly associated with him. Like, I was first thinking, going, guy, or man, or carbon-based life form. If you really want a really devastating portrait of Bush, James Lilix has a column on NRO today where he basically describes Jeb Bush is your rich brother-in-law who knows someday you're going to ask for money and has spent a lot of time rehearsing how he's going to say no. And we're laughing because we're like, yeah, okay, he does give off that vibe. It's there.
So. Oh, that is fantastic. Okay, on to the bad martini now. quickly changing mood, because obviously much of yesterday was taken up by the shock and horror of the on-air murders in Roanoke, Virginia, of Allison Parker and Adam Ward. The woman being interviewed, thankfully, is going to live. She survived her surgery and so forth. Just horrific in so many different ways. The guy's live tweeting his effort to escape authorities. Finally, he takes his own life fairly close to Washington, actually. He was headed in this direction. And, Jim, it almost always happens with tragedies like these. You have the people who are mature about it, and in the first 24 to 48 hours, they simply say, what a horrific thing. We're praying for their family and their friends and that sort of thing. But there are always those, some in elected office, some not, who instantly tried to turn this into a political discussion, the president being no exception yesterday, speaking to WPVI Philadelphia.
What we know is that the number of people who die from gun-related incidents around this country dwarfs any deaths that happen through terrorism.
Hillary Clinton and Terry McAuliffe also calling for gun control. The manifesto written by the killer talks about how the Charleston church shooting pushed him over the edge. You want a race war, you've got it. And so other folks, some on the right, saying that the media fanning the flames of that type of crime have incited people. You wrote about this a lot, Jim, about how everybody just needs to calm down and stop jumping to generic conclusions.
Yeah, it's really depressing that now every time there's a horrific shooting in this country, there's a two-step process. The first is the horror of what happens. And the second step is the increasingly quick response where that, you know, you people who disagree with me, you're the real problem. Every time there's a shooting, I get at least one guy on Twitter saying, you support the NRA, you have blood on your hands. It's a complete obliteration of the concept of individual responsibility. And I think it's a lot of crude exploitation of this. And it used to be we could point our fingers to the left. I think the president is pretty shameless in his statement there. But I'm seeing some response on the right who contend that this guy did what he did because of a race-baiting media, because of incendiary rhetoric from politicians and things like this. And I really don't like that any more than I like blaming heavy metal music or violent video games or Dungeons and Dragons or any of this kind of stuff, because I ultimately, you make the choice on what you decide to do. And the moment we on the right start saying, well, wait a second, maybe some things the media said, you know, contributed to this or drove him to do it, then we're saying that controversial thoughts can cause violence. That ever turns into this, well, you got to watch what you say. Because if you say something, it might set off a crazy. I don't think we can know what sets off a crazy because they're crazy. We keep trying to impose a logic onto their thinking process. And somebody said, well, if you show the video too much, it'll inspire copycats. Well, once you've got the desire to commit a mass shooting, how are we supposed to know what's going to inspire copycats? I really don't like this thinking. I know some people are just trying to do it to put the shoe on the other foot. I feel like the right has been unfairly blamed for various shootings in the past. I don't see it as an improvement to say that we want to kind of impose our own either overt or kind of subtle censorship, that we want to deem certain ideas too controversial for discussion. And the idea that, well, yes, someone pulled the trigger and killed innocent people, but the real problem is what people are saying. I don't like that line of thinking one bit. I think we've got to stand up against it.
On to the crazy martini now, Jim, and this is from Politico. The first GOP presidential candidate to go to war publicly with the Republican National Committee is not Donald Trump. It's Carly Fiorina. Fiorina, the only female candidate in the GOP field, has surged in the polls since a widely praised performance in the happy hour debate earlier this month, but she has a problem. There haven't been enough polls to catapult Fiorina from 14th place, where she stood going into that debate, into the top 10 ranking for CNN's September 16th debate. That's because CNN, unlike Fox News, which only used the final five polls released before its debate, outlined criteria this spring in which it said it would average the results of polls released between July 16th and September 10th, and of the 10 polls that currently qualify for inclusion in CNN's average, 8 were conducted before the first debate. They're only expecting a couple more since it's tough to poll over Labor Day and so forth. So basically, she could easily be left out of this debate because most of the polls still being considered for a September 16th debate were conducted before August 6th.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem to make much sense, right? If you try to determine who's in the top 10, why are you using a bunch of polls from earlier in the summer? I think Fiorina's got a very legitimate gripe. Almost every observer said, boy, she did a really nice job in that first debate. And I think maybe got a little overhyped in the post-debate analysis. But either way, everybody said, look, she did a really good job. And she did increase her numbers in the polls. Not phenomenally, you know, like she's maybe getting up to that high single-digit range instead of that mid to low single-digit range. But again, if she doesn't get on that top 10 stage, well, then what's the point? You know, why doing a great job in the first debate doesn't get you into the second debate. Then what's the point of good debate performances? And then kind of the second thing is, look, right now there's Donald Trump who's way ahead, Jeb Bush who's in second, and maybe Scott Walker's in third. A couple people have Kasich kind of picking up. I think it was, you know, there was like four candidates who were above 6% in the Real Clear Politics average, right? There's a whole bunch of people who are all kind of clustered around pretty low. So the idea that, oh, we're going to have Christie up on that stage, but we're not going to have Trump, or we're going to have Kasich up on that stage, but not somebody, like, at this point, the difference between 4% and 6%, one, it could be the margin of error of the poll, and two, it seems like an increasingly arbitrary standard. If you really want to have a top tier, it would be Donald Trump on the stage by himself, which he probably would really like. But so the criteria doesn't seem to make sense, and if you end up with the same top 10 as the first one, people are going to wonder, why is this criteria being used, and just what does Carly Fiorina have to do to get up on that top tier debate stage?
Yeah, it's very tough, because if you're looking at a snapshot of where the race stands right now, it's obvious that if you look at state polls or even some of the few national polls that have come out, that she has risen. I think Fox News was talking about this today, and they showed her easily within the top 10. If by any rational standard, that would appear to be the case. But the point that CNN and the RNC are making is that these were the rules that everybody agreed to. These are the rules that are going to stay in place. And if that ends up hurting one campaign, well, we can't stick our thumb on the scale just to help one person and not help the other ones.
Maybe the simplest, easiest way is just split them into two groups by randomly and just do it over two nights. Just forget it. The poll system is a bad idea. Give everybody a good chance on the stage and see where it shakes out after that.
All right. So clearly, all this worries.
Another cheery week coming to an end there, Greg. Great work.
Yeah. Exactly. I will be out tomorrow. Rich McFadden will be in for me. Jim will be here. So, Jim, enjoy tomorrow and have a great weekend.
Have a great weekend, Greg. See you Monday.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Tune in Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.